Melbourne AA Steps Weekend 2008. This is Harry talking about Step 5.
Good evening. My name is Harry. I'm an alcoholic. It's nice to see a lot of familiar faces. A lot of you know my story. Yes, I won't burden you with it further, but I didn't come into AA for an argument. I came in because the solution to my problems are booze and drugs. It, for a long time, failed me. They left me... I was probably worse stoned than I was straight, and that was saying something. I was morally bankrupt, physically ailing, and unable to continue. I was classically stuck between a rock and a hard place. I got into the rooms of AA. I went under my own steam, which seems is unusual. It's normal to be taken or carried in, but I went on my own, and I started to listen because I had to. I had a feeling that this was my last port of call, and I had no great, there was no choice, really. They told me early on that that my possibilities, if I went back out, were institutions, jail, or death, and I tended to agree with them. But it still didn't stop me from thinking I knew everything. I remember my first meeting was strange. I was told to, I was given half a cup of tea, which I thought was a bit stiff. Yeah, you think, come on. You know, they probably didn't realise that I was famous. You know. But the guy that pulled me in was a man called Alan, and Alan still has, I check this, still has the biggest hands in AA. He has big in the hands. So he pulled me, hooked me in. It's like the shake is the pull, you know. Pulled me in and sat me down, and I was given this tea, and I was told to listen up for the similarities, not the differences. And I thought that was pretty smart, you know, because I hadn't heard all the lines, the one-liners, you know, because I was fresh. And I was 42 years old and never been involved in a 12-step program before. The only time that I'd not drunk, my idea of controlled drinking was to be on antibiotics for an infection, you know. So, yeah, it was curious. So I started, after a few weeks, to get to, look around my surroundings, the meetings. I went every day, which was because I had to. I knew if I sat at home, I wouldn't really last too long. But I started to check out the signs. The one I deciphered first was the biggest one, which said hope. You know, and hope made a big deal of difference to me, because I found that I had it by coming back on a daily basis. It did spring eternal, and it was good. But then I started to appreciate that there was something more to this recovery than just being hopeful. And it was in this the 12 steps, this banner. And I remember counting all the words. I remember thinking it was weird. I remember thinking, what do you do with it? Not too long after, I started going to what still is my home group, the men's group, the deal on a Sunday night, and someone said to me that there is a solution to my restlessness, irritability, and discontent, and it was in these steps. It was what I'd always wanted, a guide to living in the world that wasn't in a pill bottle or in a lump or in a bag or in a bottle. And that's how I reached out. That's why I coped with stuff. Because I had this condition that when I was sober, I felt very little. I felt full of fear, and I wanted to be part of the rest of the world. When I drank and took drugs, I didn't become like everybody else. I became better than. So that was my problem. I wanted to be part of the world. I didn't want to be better than. I didn't want to be Tarzan, you know, And that's what booze and dope and stuff did to me. So I got a sponsor who was, well, I still have this same guy. I talked to him on the tram when I came tonight. I've talked to him on a daily basis for say, 9 years. God bless him. And he has never given me a bum steer. And he told me when I asked him to maybe could he find the time to show me this stuff, he said yes. He said, I'll see you at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And before my home group started, we'd sit in the hall and we'd do the book for an hour. And he slowly took me into this this maze. The steps for me were a maze, because it is so easy to spoil this program with where the disease is centered in, with the mind. And I had a lot of trouble intellectualizing this thing, but I didn't see its simplicity. And he drew that out of me, because as a sponsor, I mean, you have to spend a bit of time thinking about, you know, getting a sponsor that suits you, because you can get, I don't know, it's a hard thing. I fell in with a good man, but he spoke little and suggested action, and that's what drew me into recovery and made me useful. The first three steps I found were very confrontational. I didn't realize. I thought it was all about me. But the first word was we, and that sort of, I was a bit taken with that, you know. I thought, no, I'm fairly important. I need a sort of, anyway, we got into it. The first three steps, I had to admit in my guts and in my heart that I was powerless over booze. I was powerless over most things. I was driven by fear, and my life was unmanageable. Then I had to develop in step two a willingness to accept a higher power in my life. I had to surrender my will, and that was very hard. I didn't understand. Surrender to me is sort of you know, saying to someone that's belting you, I've had enough. But it's not about that. It's surrender at depth. I had to appreciate that it was my only hope was to surrender, so I could find a power greater than myself, and I was able to do that. I remember when I came to my third step prayer, I thought, you know, he said, let's kneel down. And I think that was the first time I'd knelt down for a long time, except when I'd been overcome by drugs, you know. I knelt down with him and we said this prayer together, and I thought it was weird, you know, because I hadn't let go completely. And I thought, you know, God, what's this? You know, I mean, this man is a tough man. And he always said to me, you know, how tough are you, you know, to take this on board? And I said, I'll try my best. So we did this. But then we got into the fourth and fifth. And this, the first few steps had taken a while, but the fourth and fifth I balked. I barked and I carried on. I wriggled and I squirmed. And he just said, like, don't get wound up about it. He said, the greatest motivator in this program is fear. And he said, that kicks you along at every stage. And I grew to appreciate that was more than true. And I started to appreciate that if I didn't do a thorough and fearless moral inventory and share it with him and this God that I had a willingness to believe in, I didn't have a chance. He said to me always, you know, he said, give me a year of your life. And what he meant by that was, come to AA and listen up big. And he said, if you don't like it, he said, we've got a misery back guarantee. Which I thought was pretty cool, you know. So with this in mind, my head ringing, you know, I used to write a lot when I was drinking and do a lot of stimulants. And I thought I was pretty good at writing, you know. And I wrote a lot over the years. The 70s was full of dribble that I'd written, you know, because when everybody had gone to bed, I was still buzzing, you know, and I'd write reams of deep and meaningless shite, you know. So I thought, yeah, I'll start writing. He said, pick up a pen. He said, when you put it on paper, it's real. And I thought, fuck, you know. So I got into it, and it was difficult because it wasn't for me to write it down. He gave me the form. It's all in the textbook. The alcohol, the AA, the book of AA, the big book is the textbook. And it's all in there. The columns, I had to do it by the book. And I thought that was a bit irritating because I wanted to do it my way, you know. I wanted to write down the things that, you know, I thought were sort of risky and naughty. But I don't want to tell him the good stuff, you know. But it took me a while because he'd gee me up, you know. He'd say, you know, how are you going with it? And I said, well, because I'd ring him on a daily basis and say, you know, this is hard, that's hard. And I started to get it, you know, and I started to come to terms with it. Because I have this image, you know, with doing my fifth, that, you know, my mind, what my sponsor calls the devil's playground, it's like an overgrown garden. That's how I was when I started doing the fourth. And what you had to do was cut back all the weeds so you had a bit of clarity, you know. I had to get in with the heavy-duty scrub cutter, you know. And that's what happened, you know. I started to... So we chose the day. He said, I think you've had enough time, you know. And I'd done my ills, my sex conduct and my resentments and my fears. And I'll be honest, you know, because he told me quite regularly, you know, we're not writing a book, you know. And I thought that was a bit harsh, you know, because... You know, I was a pretty talented guy, you know. I saw it as at times, because I was ego-driven, you know, as like a celebration of my seedy life. But what it was it was very condensed. Basically, he said, we're doing an inventory, and he said, your head's a shop, and it's got some rotting, festering shit in there. That's what we've got to dig out. And that's what we did. We sat down, we chose that. He said, where do you want to do it, you know? So we chose this little cricket pavilion that I used to sit in and drink sherry and smoke joints. And it was a precious place because for years I used to sit on the top tier of this pavilion and I'd get stoned. And I always used to think I could see the bay from there. You know, I see the boats. And we were in Malvern. And so I always used to sit here. It's a terrific view of the bay. And he's going... So that's when I started to lay this stuff on him. And see, what we were doing here was, it's very easy when you get into AA to admit you're a conniving asshole. But the process, it tells you why. You know, and that's what I had. That's what was insightful about this process for me. It explained to me why I was the way I was, why I drank, why I was the man I was. The man I was, it was why I drank came out in that process. I told him this stuff, and because he'd been hard and not wanted to hear the entertaining stuff like the accidental burglaries, you know, I thought were very funny. He didn't think I was very funny at all. He said, what the hell is that about? It's about the stench that was in my mind. And that's what came out that afternoon. It took me an hour or so. We discussed every aspect, every fear and the resentments. And we worked out by chasing the columns what was my part in it. That, we pulled it straight back across the columns and we dug. And there I was in all my glory, you know. I was self-will run riot. I was conniving, self-obsessed. And, yeah, I was revealed. And then, it's strange, he kicked me straight into 6, 7 and 8. He said, go and sit down and think about, have we missed anything? You know, because we're building the foundation to the rest of my sober life. And it was an enormous relief. You know, I didn't fall... I didn't see anything burn, any sort of huge spiritual experience. But what I had was a fundamental change of depth. It was a curious feeling because most of my anticipated most of my anticipation about sobriety has been cobblers, you know. I mean, the things I expect have always just gone up in smoke, and the reality of sobriety presents itself to me. That I see as the higher power playing its part in my life, because I'm still trying to write the script. So what I had after this fifth step with this guy was, I'd actually exposed myself to somebody else in God. You know, And it was a very humbling experience because he sat there and he patiently nodded and listened to me. And he didn't blush or didn't get mad, didn't judge me. He just said, that's how it is, you know. And he illustrated some of my worst bits with some of his worst bits. And I thought, how awful. How could you do such a thing? I was being just being funny. So we had a, I mean, that to me is it was an exciting experience because I thought, how can that be enjoyable? But, you know, when you move on with a clearer, a garden that's been trimmed up, cut up, and it's, I mean, you've got a good place to work with. And that means, you know, that the number one killer of alcoholics is resentment. And they're driven by fear, anxiety, envy, and all that stuff. If you've got a clear mind, and I threw out a lot of my resentments and fears, I ended up with this, you know, I really had to try hard to get mad with stuff, you know, and I moved on. And as we got further down, I started to do my amends, and I found a great understanding very quickly in using that 10-step inventory, so I didn't have to do another fourth and fifth step. I wouldn't let the garden get out of hand. You know, so I had a manicuring happening on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, so it started to work well for me. But what it started, I mean, the revelation of that fifth for me made me appreciate, because I never saw it till that point, was that how I could be useful to other people. Because for 42 years of my life, I've been driven by self-will. I've been driven by this bondage that was me. I was just completely obsessed with me. And suddenly I started to see that once I started to see clearly that I saw how I could be helpful. And the guts of this thing is making yourself useful in this program, you know. And when I understand this thing, I can grasp it, I live by these principles the majority of the time. And I find it is in my best interests to share this, you know, because it's difficult to share, you know, because people don't want it. It's hard. You know, and I'm not saying I'm great because I'm involved in this thing, but I prefer it this way because my alternatives are very unpleasant. You know, what will I go back to? I don't know, my friend busted. We did the first 5 years together, and my friend busted after 5 years, and I rang him up because we rang each other a lot, and I said, you know, are you okay? And he said, no, I'm drunk. I said, you're kidding, you know, because we talked the day before. And I said, what happened? And he's in the... he ended up after the following day in the psych unit at the Alfred, and he was manhandled there by half a dozen St. Kilda policemen, you know. And I said, well, you know, we've known each other a long time. We've gone the hard yards of sobriety together. And I said, well, what happened? What was it fucking like? And he said, the first sip was all right. He said, it went straight downhill from there, you know. That's the only joy you got, you know. He said, it's amazing. From the second pot, next thing he knew, he was down the street with a slab and a bottle of whiskey. It was in an hour, you know. And from there, it was a hop, skip and a jump to the psych unit, and not a good place to be. So what I'm saying here about the fifth, it's... Pain is our touchstone. It has to be. It kicks us along. But it's a tremendous relief to pare all that garbage back, to go through your mind with a big brush cutter, cut out all the crap, discard it. It's smelly, you know. It'll bring us down. It'll take us back to those places, the degradation, the humiliation. You don't need it, you know. But on a daily basis, I find the fifth, I don't have to do it again. If I drink again, maybe I'll be out there long. I don't know. I don't try not to think about it. But a tenth, a good daily inventory keeps me fresh and keeps me swinging. And, you know, if you're in the middle of your fourth, don't worry about it too much. Take your time. I always say to the people I sponsor, you know, let your recovery gather its own momentum. You can't push it, you know. You've got to let it go. And God will introduce himself. And I think that's important. And I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to share tonight. And I'd like to thank all you people for my sobriety. Thank you.
Information about the annual Melbourne AA Steps Weekend is available from www.stepsweekend.aagroup.org.au. Thanks for letting us share.